good evening to you. We are joined in the studio tonight by Terry Howard and by Stuart Minchin, and we'll be joined later by David Triggs from Bury Football Club and Danny Carter too. Good evening to you, wherever you may be. Hope you can hear us all loud and clearly. And it's a rainy old day, isn't it? Terry Howard is in the studio with us, as so is Stuart Minchin. And a little later on, we'll be talking to Bury about their problems and about the start of a new club there. And Danny Carter will be joining us later on as well to... they can hear me now. They've been putting their headphones on, these two. They've been playing around with headphones. Danny Carter will join us later on to talk about his time at Late Night and some reminisce with Terry here, and quite a few memories, too, I should think.
Yes, you'd have to get the abridged version tonight, mate, because I'm sure there are young children listening.
I'm sure there is some young children listening, so we'll keep it clean.
It might make
tonight.
A few adults blush as well.
Right, Stuart, it's been a week, and you're busy tomorrow, aren't you? You've got an event to be at tomorrow?
I am very busy tomorrow, yeah. So helping out at the food bank for the Trust for about an hour and a half, which is obviously all good for a good cause, so happy to be involved.
Excellent. And that's taking place at what time is that?
That is 12 till 1.30.
At Leighton Church. That's a lighthouse, 35 Church Road, Leighton, E10 5JP. Take along for the food bank. So take it along and go along to the food bank there and make a donation, as half our computer's shut down in here. I don't know what's gone on here. We've had a bit of a power cut, so I hope everybody can still hear us. It's a bit of a strange situation at the moment in the studio because half the screens have all gone down and we're in total darkness. So this is good, isn't it? All to part of the fun of live radio, I should think. Right. Questions have arose this week from the message board. And before we go, touch on Orient, Stuart. Bergen on the message board. What do we make of the Macclesfield situation, where Macclesfield have... gone out of the league? They've lost their appeal today. Now, Stevenage have stayed in the league, as we know. Does Stevenage deserve to stay in this league?
My personal opinion is no. The league over, whatever it was, 36 games, didn't lie. Stevenage weren't the best team. They were the worst team in the league. And quite rightly, in my opinion, should have been relegated. I do get it. I do understand that they made an appeal. They've kind of stayed up as a result. But the league didn't lie. And I do feel sorry for Macclesfield's players and staff more than I do the owners. And obviously it's not right what's gone on. And obviously they've been penalised, I guess, appropriately. But it's not right. It's not fair. Because ultimately the number of games that they won put them in a much stronger position than what they've ended up. So I do feel sorry for them to a certain degree, but this has to kind of, it's much part of a much bigger picture that needs to be resolved in some way, shape or form when it comes to owners. So it doesn't surprise me that they've lost today and therefore have gone down, but maybe Stevenage should have gone with them, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, Terry, what do you think should have happened?
Whatever you think about Macclesfield, Stevenage can count itself really lucky. Stuart just said, this has been an ongoing thing for a number of years, and Orient fans can empathise completely with Macclesfield. the powers that be don't really seem to want to do much about it. They've either got to change the legislation, they've got to do something, because this is going to go on and on, and unfortunately players will suffer, fans will suffer, the people that should suffer, the owners and that, never seem to. So I agree completely with Stuart.
So, I think Notts County myself should have come up, and both the clubs should have gone. So, I don't know what you think of that, Stu.
There'll be arguments for and against, let's be honest. You know, Stevenage are going to be arguing the fact that they should have stayed up on the basis that, you know, Macclesfield, for their off-field issues, have paid a price. So, I get it, but this isn't going to go away, like Terry said. We're going to have it again, aren't we? Let's be honest.
Oh, almost certainly. Now, they've drawn the EFL Cup and the Kariba Cup, and we've got Forest Green Rovers in the Kariba Cup away, which is a joy, I'm sure, for everybody concerned with Leighton Orient after the last time we played them. And the EFL Trophy, are you surprised that's taking place, given all the problems we've got?
I'm a little bit, on the basis that we know we're already going to be playing quite a few Tuesday, Saturdays right up until Christmas. So it probably could have been something that could have been forgotten about for this season and this season only. I guess the argument is that the under 23 sides that want to take part, is game time for them as well. And the more they progress, is more game time for their under 23 squads. Whether it actually helps us in the long run, I don't think so. Not this year anyway.
So it's Wimbledon, Charlton, Orient and Brighton's under-23s. Terry, are you a fan of these under-23s taking part or not?
There's pros and cons to it. I mean, it serves a purpose maybe for the so-called bigger clubs. I much prefer a much simpler format where it's a knockout competition. I think it works on a better level. You've seen at the highest level in the Champions League and the Europa League games, which have been, you know, pretty entertaining affairs over the last week or so. I'd much rather it just be a one-off. You go through, fine. If you don't, you're out. And as you said, with what's currently happening in the world and it's impacting on football, it would have made a lot more sense probably not to have had it this season, but it is what it is.
Yeah, indeed. Right, let's have a look at some of the questions we've had in on this quite week football-wise for Orient. They did, by the way, play Reading's under-23s on the weekend, and a neat and tidy 2-0 win there, Stu.
Yeah, and I think from what I've seen is that they played some nice football, took their chances when they came along, and deserved to win. So, you know, it's a run out. It's their first proper game, competitive game. Every minute counts and every minute helps, I reckon, at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, it's 2-0. Clay and Angold are scorers. And I say, the under-23s, I don't know, they play a different way, don't they, really? I don't know if it's a great test for...
I don't know. I think when you look last season in the EFL Cup, when we played Brighton, you know, Brighton, you could see, were obviously playing in a certain way. You know, their tempo was much quicker as well. Probably how they used to it if they do move up into... like the Premier League first teams, etc. So again, there's fours and against it, because we're not playing in that scenario week in, week out, are we? So it's very, very different. But again, it's the club are where they are with who they can play at the moment as well. So it is what it is at the moment, and they're probably better off playing an under 23 squad rather than a National League South or lower at the moment, to be honest.
Okay, well, they've got Spurs, as we know, tonight, under-23s. And then on Saturday, they're streaming a match against Northampton at 1 o'clock from Northampton. But that'll be a proper test, won't it?
Yeah, and it'll be a better test as well from that level of playing another League Two side that obviously need the minutes as well. So, yeah, it helps, definitely.
So, really, with no crowds coming in, we... you know, we've got a question from Kent on the message board. Not that Kent, that's somebody else. Does Terry feel that playing without a crowd can affect the player's game?
It can. If you're professional, you get on with it. But I think having a crowd there does give that little bit of edge. You know, you ask most people. I mean, playing friendlies is... It doesn't make a little bit of difference at this stage. I mean, it's all about fitness and shape at the moment. That's all Ross will be looking at the moment. But from a player's point of view, you know, it's great to have a little roar of the crowd, even if there's only a few thousand there. It does make a difference, does give you a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, so, I mean, Stuart, do you think it would affect you if you had no crowd?
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to do roly-polies, really, would I, without having the crowd going behind me, maybe. But, yeah, I think so. I think it helps the atmosphere, helps. It's certainly strange with no atmosphere and no noise from the crowd. So I think it does make a difference, yeah.
Right, now, the question's really about our squad and where we feel the weaknesses may lie. Now, do you think, what positions do you think we still need to reinforce, Stu?
I think naturally centre half, because obviously you've lost Marv. So you're obviously going to want, as there's one out, one in. I think there's a big thing at the moment with Orient fans about we've got to sign people. And, you know, you see players that become available and it's, oh, we want him, we need him, whatever. It doesn't really work like that, unfortunately. I think it's very, very hard to kind of say exactly where we need to strengthen at this stage. I think the loan market's going to play a heavy part this year, like it will do for a lot of clubs. And so for me, at the moment, now that we're all signed, it's just a centre-half, really.
Right, so you're just centre-half. And Courthurst, what do you think of him?
My personal opinion?
Yep.
No.
Right.
I don't think it's what we need. I don't think, you know, if you were looking for someone that was going to guarantee you 20 goals a season, then definitely. If he was going to play the right number of games, definitely. But just going back on past, he's not someone for me.
No. So, I mean, we've got a situation, Terry, you haven't watched the side, I suppose, at the moment, but that it's a spine that is the concern, isn't it, from that centre of defence, the centre halves. Up front, how do you feel we are at the moment?
I think they've got good numbers there. I'm not sure. I mean, it all depends what system Ross is going to go with, whether he's going to have two up the top, whether he's going to play one up the top. We look to have numbers in all areas. Whether we've got enough quality in the areas is another matter. But, I mean, it all depends with the shape of the team. I say we've got enough bodies there. I agree with Stuart that I think it might take a little inspired signing of a loan signing or two that could be all the difference. You know, I think the squad as it stands is very reasonable, but obviously there's always areas of improvement, and maybe we just need one or two new bodies in just to keep everyone on their toes. But centre half does look a little bit of a problem area at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the problem we've got is, of course, that there could be a cap on the number of players allowed in the squad. I know the EFL are probably going to be making a decision on that, if not today, then in the very near future. I mean, that could affect quite a lot of clubs, Terry, really, couldn't it?
Well, if they're going to do that, then that sort of brings in the question about the EFL trophy, doesn't it? I mean, it's another competition for you to have to fill players in. So if they're going to put a cap on it, maybe they should have thought about the number of games that are going to be played in a season. I think in essence, it's not a bad idea. Salary capping and player capping, it's all a decent idea in theory. In practice, I mean, we'll wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about the... I'm just going to take a phone call here because hopefully, he says, hopefully on the end of the line, hopefully, is David Triggs from Bury Football Club. Are you there, David?
Hi, Andy. How's it going?
I'm not too bad, my friend. It's nice to hear from you. We're just hang on the line. We're just finishing what we're saying here. We'll come on to Bury in just a second.
No problem.
Right, so we got Wimbledon, Charlton, Orient and Brighton under 23s, as we said, in the EFL Trophy, Terry. And as you were just touching on, do you think these games should be pre-season?
Yeah, well, I mean, going back years for older listeners, we used to have the Anglo-Scottish Cup that Orient used to be involved in, and that was a great little competition from a fitness point of view, a little bit of competition you're playing for rather than just a run-of-the-mill friendly. Yeah, I would say that'd been a very good idea to have done that. It would have served a greater purpose that way.
He would. Well, as we said, joining us on the phone from Bury AFC is David Trick. And how's things up there, Dave, at the moment?
It's not too bad. We've obviously, with the whole sort of COVID situation, things are still a bit up in the air. Things have moved really quick over the past few weeks. So since finding out we were placed in a league in the North West Counties League, Division 1 North, which is a bit of a mouthful, but we'll get used to it. And then we announced our home and away shirts for the season. They've been on sale and they've sold fantastically well.
Yeah, we've been seeing that. I mean, you're well into four figures, aren't you? 1,000 of this one or something or other? And
yeah, I think the last I saw it was about just over 1,400 home and away shirts altogether we'd sold.
I mean, that is an amazing achievement for a side, you know, with all due respect, going to be playing in the North West Counties League to sell 1,400 shirts and you've still got time to sell more. That's a tremendous achievement and people are really rallying to the call, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, understandably, a lot of fans were holding out hope for the original club to be admitted into the league or a sale to go through. And then the news came through that the FA and the Alliance League Committee had rejected Steve Dale's application to go into the National League North. And I feel like that probably, in some people's mind that were a bit on the fence, was, I suppose, the sort of final nail in the coffin. So we have seen a bit of a swell of interest since then. It's not necessarily something to be celebrated because, you know, people are still understandably upset and grieving for the loss of the club, but it means that we just have more momentum behind us and hopefully, you know, we can push on with that.
Yeah, I mean, before we go back and recap over the situation, I mean, with the crowds that you're expected to get at that level, I mean, I think it's realistic to expect promotion, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't want to make a rod for my own back. I think, you know, from an outsider looking in, then it certainly is. When you look at, you know, our membership, we've got around 850 members that are paying either £5 a month or £60 a year. Obviously, the shirt sales, as I previously mentioned, and our attendances are probably bigger than any other team in our league. For me personally, I just want a sustainable football club. The last 12 months has shown me that life without a football team is something that I never want to repeat again. So it sort of puts on field achievements into a bit of perspective, I guess.
So let's just wind it back a little bit, because Bury, you know, Dale's come in and on the surface Bury were doing really well. So when did you get the first inkling that all wasn't right in the camp?
So Steve Dale took over around December 2018, which was just before Christmas, and you know, fans were aware of the sort of perilous financial position that the club was in due to the previous owner. Personally, I was pretty elated when he came in, just because it meant the previous owner was gone, and as these people tend to do, started saying all the right things. People looked at his history on Companies House and saw that he had a poor record, shall we say, of keeping businesses afloat. But again, he came out and said the right things, and people were looking at the movement on Companies House, and it seemed to be making the right signals. The first sort of red flag started appearing around mid-March, when rumours surfaced that the players were paid late the previous month, and then at the end of March they again weren't being paid on time. And as you sort of alluded to, this was despite the team being around third or fourth in the league at that time, but certainly going really well. And yeah, it sort of snowballed from there, really. There was promises of payment to the playing squad that never materialised. So they went pretty much 3 months unpaid, as far as I'm aware, getting help from the PFA where they could, and still managed to achieve promotion. So, you know, our last ever game at Gig Lane was a one that celebrated a promotion to League One. And unfortunately, we never got to play it. Over the summer, the EFL, from the start of the process, had never received any proof of funds from Steve Dale, even when the takeover first happened. So that was their main sort of sticking point over the summer. And the reason for not allowing us to start the season was the fact that he was unable to provide that. And then it was almost 12 months ago this week that the decision was finally made that we were kicked out of the football league.
And is he still involved, for people down here, is he still involved with the club?
Yeah, so the club is sort of miraculously still solvent. It still exists as a legal entity. He did negotiate a CVA which reduced our debt on the unsecured creditors down to 25%. And that then failed, sort of unsurprisingly. And he then made an application this year to the National League North, which was the highest level he could apply to. And this was again rejected for similar reasons, I believe, in that he was unable to provide proof that he could clear the debt and fund a functioning football team, essentially.
Well, it's, so they're still at Gig Lane. Is there any hope for them at all, or do you think this is the end of the road for them and they'd have to vacate there?
It's hard to say. So the club does own Gig Lane, but there is a mortgage on that the previous owner prior to Steve Dale took out. Obviously, there's no football played there for 12 months. I don't think there's been... I know Mike Curtis, the groundsman, was still cutting the pitch throughout all of last season. I think more out of sort of a ritual than anything. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the state of the ground, in terms of safety certificates and everything else that goes into it, it has just been pretty much abandoned since the end of, not last season, the season before. So, I mean, our plan is eventually to return home. We see it as our spiritual home for our supporters. I was elected onto the board, and one of the things I said, made clear in my statement, is that I wanted us to return there. So we certainly hope to Bury AFC to get back there. Me personally, I don't think Bury Football Club will kick another ball. That's just my personal opinion. There's other people out there that are still holding on hope, and ultimately we have to respect them for doing that. You know, I did my grieving sort of when we were kicked out of the league, and I channeled my grief into getting involved with the Phoenix Club, and some people haven't given up hope, and we have to respect that view and hope that, you know, if they decide that, you know, the club is dead, then that they can get on board with Bury AFC and we can be united supporters once again.
Right, so I mean, going back, I mean, I think with the name, I mean, the name of Bury Football Club, if they go, then surely you can apply to take that name after a given set of time to rename your club Bury FC again. Surely that would be possible?
Yeah, hopefully. So there is a precedent for that happening. I know Darlington did it a few years ago. I think they had to wait, off the top of my head, around 2 years before that. I think from when the club was liquidated until they could sort of make a claim to their history. So I think we would like to do that, but in terms of decisions like that, we are, you know, we want to pride ourselves on being a democratic institution. So that would be a decision that would be for our members to decide, and if they wanted to pursue that and to take on the name and the history of Bury Football Club, then that's something that as a board we would 100% back. Me personally, I would like to do that, you know. I think,
yeah, I mean, just going back here, David, that, you know, okay, the club's gone. You've all decided now. How did you get together and decide that as supporters you're going to start a Phoenix club?
So there was a survey that went round shortly after. So the club was expelled in the August, sort of early September, that a survey went round to basically pool the supporters and get people's sort of backgrounds and skill sets together. Who would be interested in starting up a Phoenix club, and it was always there as a fallback option. We always said that if Steve Dale sold the club to someone that had the best interest at heart and could run it as a sustainable football club, we would stand down. Now, obviously, as time's gone on, more people have come round to the Phoenix club, as they've not felt that Bury Football Club will carry on. So we had a meeting at a local pub near the ground. I think one of the guys from your fans trust actually spoke, Matt Roper, I think he was
That's
called.
That's right, yeah.
So
and he spoke for how long?
I actually, believe it or not, I was on holiday, so I wasn't there.
All right.
I know that he, you know, he spoke very, very well and sort of enthused a lot of people behind what we were trying to achieve.
Yeah, he's a good lad. He's a good lad, Matt.
Yeah, so first, so a lot of people, I think we got around 300 responses to that initial survey, and then there was a group who were initially involved that we basically set up different like work streams. So my degree is in law, so I was asked to look after the legal side of things. We had people that worked in media and communications, people that worked in marketing, of all these different skills from within the fan base that we tried to elevate and tried to make use of. And then it's been a bit of a crazy year since then, as you can imagine, sort of starting from scratch. So that was, as I said, like the September, and then by the end of the year, we formally registered the club with our local FA, and then it sort of progressed further into the new year, where we were applying for the league. Applying to the FA to be placed in the league, and to also arrange a ground share, because obviously we're unable to play at Gig Lane, so we're playing at the Newvent Stadium, which is Radcliffe FC's home, so it's about 3 miles from where Gig Lane is. Sure. And then, yeah, everything sort of picked up from then. We did our official launch in April, where we opened to the members, which was a really important milestone, because obviously prior to that we were having to make decisions that weren't of a massive effect to the club, I'd say. But, you know, it was people that were making decisions that weren't elected into that position. And it was decisions that the fans weren't, and members weren't, having any direct input on. So I feel like once we had a firm membership base, it meant that we were then able to be guided by those people and how we'd move forward.
Terry Howe.
Sure. Yeah, hi, David. Played a number of times at Gig Lane, and I've got to say, it was not my most favourite ground. I give away a penalty there, you beat us 1-0. I had my foot split open there. I remember we turned up, we travelled on Christmas Day for a Boxing Day game, and it got called off an hour before the kick-off. So I don't wish what happened on you, but Gig Lane was always a nightmare for me. All I would say to you, mate, is I played for Aldershot when they were coming up as a Phoenix club back in the late 90s and early noughties, and stick at it, mate, because that club was wonderful. As long as the supporters still love their club, which you obviously do, and there's plenty of you there, it was a wonderful time. I know everything seems a bit, you know, grey, but out of adversity comes some great things. And at Aldershot, we were playing my debut in the Ryman 1 North. I think we had about 2,500 for a home game in the Ryman 1 North. We were playing we had a top of the table clash against Billericay, 4,000 there. And I'm sure that Bury, being a very big club still, and who everyone knows, established league club, you know, just stick at it, mate. And, you know, this might all just seem like a bad dream in a few years, hopefully.
Yeah, well, thanks very much, Terry. Obviously, we take a lot of inspiration from other clubs that have been in similar positions. Personally, I've spoken to a guy who's involved with AFC Wimbledon, Mark Jones, when they first went about reforming. And people at Chester, Jeff Banks is the director at Chester, and Anthony Johnson, who's the manager. He's previously managed Salford City, and he's actually a Bury fan. So obviously when we were putting plans in place, we had expertise that pretty much right across the board within our fan base. But the one thing we didn't really know was the on-field stuff. We didn't really have the first clue, to be honest, in terms of what was to be expected of facilities, you know, how often did you train, and Jono was fantastic. So I think the one thing that I've sort of realised is the support network there, at clubs that have been there and done it, and also clubs that we're going to be playing against, has really sort of restored my faith in football. And, you know, unfortunately, it's looking like we may have to become part of that, the way it's going, and you look at this, you know, teams like Charlton and Wigan, the enormous football clubs, and find themselves in, you know, scarily similar situations where they've just been let down by the governance of the game. And it's a really scary time, but as you say, I think, you know, I'm looking forward to the first game, I'm looking forward to these sort of short-term milestones, but I'm more looking forward to in 5 years, just looking back and thinking what we've built and how far, hopefully how far we've come, and the fact we've got the structure in place to meet the club fan-owned, and that we won't find ourselves in a position where, you know, some chancer can come in and rip it from us like what happened previously.
Yeah, I mean, what sort of is the wages? You seem to be signing a player a day at the moment, and you've got your manager in place now. And what's the sort of, I mean, I won't ask for individuals, but what's the sort of average wage you're offering there, if at all?
So all the players that we've signed so far are on non-contract terms, which is pretty much the standard at the level we'll be playing at. So, you know, I think they have to give a week's notice, and they can sign for someone else. We have given the manager, Andy Welsh, a competitive budget, but it's one that is within sort of the current parameters of our league, essentially, or as far as we can tell. We spoke to other clubs that are in and around that level, and we feel it's a competitive budget. So we've very much learnt from our mistakes in a sense of financial responsibility. Ultimately, we want the club to be self-sufficient. That's the most important thing, and obviously that's one of the lessons that we've learnt from what we've all been through.
Yeah, I think what you've got in your favour is that, as far as the players are concerned at that level, is the kudos of saying they're playing for Bury, as opposed to anybody else in that league or the league above. Even if the wages maybe aren't the greatest, and they may be an extra £20-30 for someone else, they probably won't go because of the kudos. Terry knows because he coached at Great Wakering, which I guess is about the same level as what you're going in at. Terry?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, we actually couldn't compete with a lot of the clubs in Essex because we were sort of the back out of the back of Southend, and it was a problem. But I think the thing in your favour, because of the reputation of the club, you still get people like players that will want to play for Bury, whatever guise or form you're in. You're still Bury, you know, and that will be a major advantage for you.
Yeah, I hope so. I think that's what we've seen is that, you know, players have you know, we're hoping to have obviously a decent number attending, sort of COVID permitting. You know, they're going to want to play in front of a big crowd every week. And yeah, that's obviously a big pull for the players that are going to be playing in our area, where there is obviously a large number of clubs. But yeah, we've got, as I said, we've put that structure in place, and we have managed to get a few coups in, like some players that have been playing sort of three or four leagues higher than where we'll be playing next year. But ultimately, you know, we need to make sure that translates onto the pitch, and that we, you know, are working hard and representing the town and the fans in the way that we deserve to be represented.
David, what else you'll find is you'll be very popular amongst other clubs' chairmen because you'll be bringing a lot of fans.
Yeah.
And what we found with Aldershot, we were taking like 500, 600 fans to away games, obviously like in the eighth tier. And they all wanted to beat us, not because we was like the biggest club in the league, Aldershot, but also because they want to keep us in that league. So the chairman would make a few quid. So
yeah.
It would be like a cup final to a lot of the teams playing you.
Yeah, and it's something that we look forward to. I know when I was speaking with Mark, who was involved at AFC Wimbledon, I think one of their first games they took, you know, 1,000 away fans to a game, and they were told that it would pay for the junior section for that club for 10 years.
Amazing!
And you know, being able to sort of not only being able to support a football team again on a Saturday afternoon, which I've missed more than I could possibly convey in words, but being able to do that, and then also, you know, support football clubs, these non-league football clubs that are so often at the heart of their community, is just something that I'm really looking forward to. And you know, I think the message for our fans, and something that we've tried to get across in our communication so far, is we might be the big boys in that league, we might be everyone's cup final, but we still need to go there and show respect and play the game the right way, and treat the clubs, as I said, with the absolute utmost respect, because we might be the big team that everyone wants to be, but ultimately they've got the experience at that level, and we're the new boys in town. So
you have. How damaging has no matches been with crowds for you at this crucial stage when you're trying to build a new club? Normally, you would have obviously pulled in a couple of friendlies against, you know, League 11s, and hopefully have had a couple of thousand through the gate playing, you know, £10 or whatever, putting some money in the kitty. But you haven't had that. How damaging has that been at this crucial stage for you?
It has been difficult, obviously, from a financial perspective, which, as you've just mentioned, you know, we would have hoped to have two or three home pre-season friendlies. The other thing is just from sort of an operational point of view and a match day point of view, you know, we're going to be playing at a ground that, as fans and as a board, we aren't too familiar with. So we would have liked to have had a few sort of dry runs with fans coming through the turnstiles to make sure that everything was up and running, and we were confident ahead of the league starting. There was some guidance released by the Football Association today, which basically limits the capacity based on the league that we're being played in. So obviously we're going in at step 6 of non-league, which is the 10th tier. and they have done it based on the minimum capacity of that league. So as it stands in August, we can now have 150 fans in our ground, which is considerably less than what we would, or what we budgeted for so far.
Yeah.
But the sort of bizarre thing is that Radcliffe, who we're ground sharing with at the same ground, because they're four leagues higher, can admit 300 fans, even though it's the same ground. So
it's £200 a ticket to get in, then.
I think that sounds reasonable, to be honest.
Yeah, race some fans. Listen, David, we can only wish you, on behalf of everybody, I'm sure all the fans of Orient, wish you all the very best going forward. And we'll keep in touch, and no doubt the two clubs. And we wish everybody involved with Bury the very best of luck. And we do empathise with you. We've been there. We know what it's like. We escaped by the skin of our teeth. But, you know, we were very, very close to having to do what you've had to do. And we think you've done brilliantly in such a short time frame to actually get the club ready to compete this season. And good luck. Let's hope you're celebrating promotion at the end of it.
Thanks very much, guys. All the best for the season.
Yeah, all the best, David.
Thanks for having us on.
Ta-da, mate. Bye-bye. Right, well, that was David Triggs there from Bury. They've done a good job, haven't they, Stuart?
Yeah, very. And I think, you know, very sympathetic. And I do wish them all the best. And, you know, you look at it from two extremes, don't you? Of Salford City, who have got owners who have got money, who have just chucked money at players and who have got them to where they are, compared to someone like that who have been in a very unfortunate situation, who are starting again, a bit like the AFC Wimbledon situation. And I just wish them good luck, to be honest, and hope that they can get back to the Football League. I say in the right way, probably shouldn't say
it's
it like that.
It's a big ask to get them back to the Football League.
It's a very big ask, but they're doing it the right way.
Yeah, I mean, it all becomes about backing. And I mean, we're going to see clubs go between now and then. And I suppose if they got a, you know, Roosevelt used to have his 5-year plans, didn't he? But I think if they got a 10-year plan, then they could be there or thereabouts knocking on the door within a decade. I think that possibly is realistic, isn't it, to be in that?
I think so. I think AFC Wimbledon did it in that kind of time frame, yeah, didn't they? And starting
in the conference
from scratch,
pyramid,
so
within that 10 years, then obviously you're in now with a shout, aren't you?
Yeah, of course you are. Yeah, and I really hope that they have that plan and they can do it and they can and they get back. You know, it seems fair.
Sorry, cutting across, Stu. The problem tell is that, you know, the higher you up you get, all of a sudden it becomes big boy stuff again. Because while you're down there and you're paying somebody £50, £80, £100. Then you jump up a bit, £150, £200. Then you jump up a bit, oh, it's £450. Oh, now it's £600, £800, £1,000. Now you're in the big leagues and you need massive backing. I mean, you've gone from, you know, a few £100 wage bill a week to tens of thousands.
I mean, I don't know what their situation is with their council, their local council. I mean, when I was, say, going back to the Aldershot, we were getting a bit of help from the council because they wanted a league, you know, they wanted basically a league club in Aldershot.
Yeah.
And it would be a massive benefit if they could get the council on board, whether that's viable, who knows, you know. But, yeah, it is a big mountain they've got to climb, and they are going to need a lot of help financially along the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's a club, as you say, with a great history, and we do seriously wish them all the very best going forward. It's a very sad tale, but hopefully they'll be smiling at the end of the season, celebrating a promotion. I mean, somebody actually made, I think Fish on the message board made a point that Bury is to Manchester as Orient is to London. You know, we've had mutual ups and downs. We're both surrounded by bigger surrounding neighbours, and you know, so it is a little bit like that. And of course, in Bury, I don't know if you know this, there was I found something in the bin at Leighton Orient about 10 years ago now, and a piece of paper with dodgy old handwriting written on it, and it was obviously written by a very old person, very shaky old handwriting, and it just said, if you've got a club historian, this may be of interest. And it was a DVD, a blank DVD disc. So I stuck it in the computer, and it was colour footage of us beating Bury to get promoted to the old First Division, the Premier League now. And it was in the bin. And anyway, cuts a long story short, you know, I gave it to Matt Porter, and Matt, in the end, got it onto YouTube, and it's up there now for everybody to see. But it's funny, we're talking to Bury tonight, and there we are linked there, the final match of the season where Orient played Bury to get promoted for the only time in their history to the very top flight. You interested in getting back into football, Tao, or you've thrown a towel in on that one?
I think that ship sailed now, mate. I mean, when I was doing a little bit of work back at the club a couple of seasons ago, it was very enjoyable. Just seeing the fans and being a little part of the club. But No, as I say, I'm 54 now, and as I say, it's becoming a younger and younger man's game.
It is. Talking of young men, hopefully we're joined by Danny Carter. Hello, Dan. Hello, Danny. Hello, hello, hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear us? There you go. Good man. Well, we're joined in the studio by Stuart Minchin and your old pal, Terry Howard.
Hey, Terry. How are you doing?
Evening, son. You okay?
Yeah, I'm all good. I'm all good.
Good.
So, what's been happening down your end, Danny? Because last time we spoke, you were in search of a certain goal against Everton.
Oh, yeah. We batted it.
Was it as good as you remembered?
Dan, I'll speak impartially. It was a wonderful goal, mate. When you do a goalkeeper like Neville Southall like that, and even he's clapping you, then, mate, that's a fantastic goal.
Yeah, actually, Del, I remember now that I actually went
When I saw it again, it was exactly as I remembered it. I mean, that's the first time I've seen it since then, and it's exactly how I remembered it. How you struck the ball and like that, where it went in the, and like Southall not getting close to it. Yeah, it's amazing. After all them years, it was just exactly how I remembered it. No. I can remember what happened for me dinner last night.
Right,
yeah, I'm happy enough to go with blaming Coops.
Coops is still trying to work out where the whip money went, I think. There you go. So, Danny, yeah, I mean... we spoke, didn't we, during the lockdown? We did a little interview with you. Not everybody heard that. That it was well received by those that did, and I think it's quite astounding. I mean, just to let people know who didn't listen to that, your career now you've come out of football after many years involved in management. It's like a polar opposite. Would you like to just refresh people exactly what you do now? Because it's amazing, really. That's excellent. I mean, sadly, as you said to us before, your dad passed and he had dementia. And unfortunately, your mother has a different sort of dementia, but she sadly has got it too. But you've made a decision as a family, on top of that job that you do, that you are going to, or you do indeed, look after your mum, which I think was fabulous.
Yeah,
a lot of people thought so too.
Respite, and my sister couldn't cope with that, so me and Jane went to the
conveyed into a room, and basically we brought from Norwich. Living with that, so like my wife going to town as the main carer, and then basically for the my work, I get up in the morning, make sure mum's okay. So before lockdown, welcome to the right place, so she goes to a day centre daily, and then basically she comes home, go and give her food, and then I was there tonight and put her there that night. So that's been 18 months now, but lockdown is very difficult. I can't imagine still working and nothing. We worked out the other day, continuously, it's 171 days that I've got my mum up for a bed every night.
Oh dear. Well, well done you. And Danny, the thing is, with anything like that, we know it's a cruel condition. I mean, both Terry and myself have close relatives with that condition, and we know it robs them of a lot. But if they could, they'd be very grateful, and I'm sure appreciate everything you're doing. So let's talk about something happier, Stuart. You've got some good memories, surely, of Mr. Carter playing football.
Many a good memory. They were probably my happy days at Orient growing up, being in our little gang of people like Matt Roper, etc., and watching Danny and Terry every week, home and away. So very, very good memories, and just happy, really happy times. Didn't matter that we weren't particularly great at times away from home, but it didn't matter.
I was just going to say that, Stu, when you said home and away, I think the home was a lot more enjoyable than the away. We didn't travel too well.
No, but we had good days.
I mean, Danny, bearing in mind the watershed's 9 o'clock, have you got any memories that involve yourself and Terry that you can repeat on air before 9 o'clock?
No, I agree, Dan, especially probably more under Peter Eustace. We definitely were a different away team than we were at home. I mean, my role within the team, if I was playing in the middle of the park, would be far more attacking. When we went away, I was basically doing a holding job, and we were a lot more conservative away from home. We can't put all the blame on Peter, because ultimately, as you say, we're responsible as well. But a lot of the things I say about the modern game is that I don't think a lot of the players take it on themselves. They have this sort of plan that they have, and they've got to do this and that. As you say, we were at our best when we basically played off the cuff, because we had good enough players that we could do that, you know.
Well, I mean, you played... Go on.
We used to laugh in the dressing room with them. We wasn't sure what we were going to do or how we were going to play. Sometimes, I think Peter was years ahead. I think we went to Crystal Palace and played 3-5-2 and got a 0-0 draw. And it was like really exciting. We played 4-3-3 sometimes. But we always went back to that, which is 4-4-2. And I think like people like me, Kenny, Garvey, Greg Berry,
I was going to say that. I mean, it suited us better. I mean, you look at the boys you just said up front, you, Robert Taylor, Kenny, Ricky Otto, Greg, all very great flair players who could create something out of nothing. And for me, you've got to allow yourself to roam a little bit freer. And sometimes, as I say, we were a little bit rigid.
Do you think that's a case of Peter being from an era where it was more rigid and the players stuck to exactly what they were supposed to do?
Maybe. We can't put it all on Peter, because to be fair, at home we probably played some of the best football that some of those fans had seen. We were scoring so many goals, and it was just, I mean, we tried to rectify it, but we just couldn't seem to be the same team away from home for whatever reason, you know.
You had that great season, didn't you, where you beat West Brom at home 2-0, I think. And then we were pretty fortunate, but we beat Stoke City 1-0. And you know,
it was.
Brian Moore was there, yeah. And we didn't play particularly well. It was actually, I think it was the day after Bobby Moore died.
I think it was.
But we played brilliantly at Stoke and letting two late goals in stoppage time and lost. And this time round, we'd been outplayed by them, but we nicked it 1-0 with Mark Cooper scoring.
Lou Macari, actually, I remember saying, he said many times we've played Orient and Orient have been the better team and we've won. And he said the boot was on the other foot today, because I remember Stoke were the better side and we nicked them. So he was,
But we were there, Terry, and we were in the top two, and it was February, and then we just hit a completely terrible run and didn't even make the playoffs. If I remember rightly, we missed out by a goal or something on making the playoffs.
I think, did we lose six on the bounce?
Something like that.
I think we lost six on the bounce, which was, you know, unthinkable, really.
It was a sad run in, yeah.
Yeah, it was a shame. It could have been very different if we'd have maybe got in the playoffs and got promoted, as I say, but it kind of all disintegrated a little bit after that, didn't it?
It did very much disintegrate.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was that season where we played West Brom away and we were 3-0 up after.
No, we lost
something silly.
We lost up there that year, I think 2-0.
Around that time, because Terry scored that night as well. It was a Wednesday night, so mate, Gary Bannister scored for West Brom. And I looked it up on YouTube in lockdown for love, because I was. I've never been so scared of being 3-0 up away from home.
I remember I started in centre midfield. So we got 3-0 up. Then he dropped me in at sweeper. And I think by the end of the game, we were so under pressure, I was playing behind Hildy. We were getting back. We got battered for about 70
Absolutely
minutes.
Battered, yeah.
But, you know.
Let's not go there. No. Otherwise, you'll have memories of Scunthorpe away coming up.
Okay, yeah. I think that was before Danny's time. I remember that well.
Danny can't get the blame on that one. I mean, Dan, how difficult it was, because in a 6-year spell, you played there under three different managers. So different styles, different approach. How difficult is that as a player when you get that much of a change? Because they were three very, very different individuals, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's all we can do at the end of the day. I mean, it didn't work out too well for me in the end with managers, but, you know, it would seem to be the contrary that I wasn't listening to what they were telling me. But
you're probably the most watched Orient player in history, Terry.
Yeah, for all the wrong reasons. I could feel you shaking, Dan.
I thought that was I wonder why the camera was moving. Oh, dear. Oh, dearie me. Well, Danny, listen, it's a brief cameo from you tonight, but thanks very much for joining us. And lovely to speak to you. All the best to the family, mate.
Yeah, cheers, Dan. Speak to you soon, mate.
Well, that was Danny Carter phoning us up from Wales. And he's a good lad, isn't he?
He's one of the best. I mean, as you say, that what he's done since he came out of football. I wanted to pull him up, though, when he said he re-educated himself. That would suggest that he was educated in the first place. Ah. And I'm not sure Danny ever went to school, so I'll take issue with him on that
one.
We
just have one quick question. You've got about 20 seconds to answer it. Do you miss the Stowe, it said, for Terry Howard? Does he miss going to the Stowe? That was from Acne Orcs.
I miss going to the Stowe, but not as much as the bookmakers miss me.
Yeah, your wallet doesn't miss it, does it?
No.
All right, folks, that's all we've got time for. Thanks, Stu. Thanks, Terry. Thanks to Danny. And thanks, obviously, David from Bury. Join us next week, folks. We'll be back with some more stuff for you.
Across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM News.